coming to you from a galaxy far, far away in our living rooms. We present to you Dual World in episode 64, which, sadly enough, I owe you guys is episode 64. As we started this recording, or it would have been a huge Nintendo 64 blowout, because there's only so many numbers that you can actually relate to in video games. 64 is one of those numbers. But it is not an N64 episode, it's not an N64 special, it is the return of Dual World In. We've had a really hectic couple of weeks. Last week, I'm not really sure what happened. I knew I was out, I said as much because it was my birthday weekend, and I spent most of that all over the place. And then I think everybody else kind of bailed out on like that Saturday, so we've been off for like 2 weeks, and I think we missed an episode like a month ago. So we haven't really been consistent, but hopefully we get better on that as we go forward, especially with everything ramping up towards E3. Joining us this week, we have Daniel.
Hello.
And we have a very special guest. We have Matthew.
Hello.
And he is joining us to talk the world of video games and what's hot, what's new, what's fresh.
We could talk about 64 games if you want. I'm ready to go on that anytime.
I would, and I can talk about 64. I can talk about any system pretty much, but I feel like that should be something that would be planned ahead and more organized, which is a shame because you would think that our official podcast would... It is organized. It's just that, you know, other people are... We're getting to that time of the year, and this happens the last 2 years as well. We're getting to that time of the year where it's just some of our hosts are in college and stuff, and this is just the time of the year where finals start type ramping up. I know Chad's going home today, for example, so it's going to be hectic trying to get everybody around because they have this test that they need to study for that, or they have this paper due. So, you know, life happens, and I've always been keen to accept that. Moving on, we are going to start off with what we've been playing. And since Matthew's our special guest, have you been playing anything recently?
Yeah, sure. I've been playing the newest, it's not new, Professor Layton game, Last Spectre. I'm a big Layton fan, always have been. They're kind of my favorite thing. I guess they're not Nintendo games, but they're kind of my favorite thing on a Nintendo system in the past 5 years. And also, there's the Indie Royale April Fool's Day bundle, which, I don't know, you might want to link it in your show. They're doing a couple games, including Explodemon and Dungeon Defender? I don't remember, some Tower Defense.
It's Defense Grid.
Yes, that's it. And a game called Hackslash Loot, which is like this really simple roguelike that I've thrown way too much time into the past couple days.
Okay, just, I mean, real quick. I thought it was a Nintendo game, or do they just publish it in the West?
They just publish it in the West. It's level 5. In fact, it's one of the only original games level 5 owns.
I figured Nintendo was linked to it because it's one of their bigger titles. It's level 5, and I guess they do it. Level 5 is just not a big enough company, I guess, to publish everything in the West.
Well, didn't they just open a U.S. publisher, like, last year or this year? I don't remember. But recently.
Best luck to them. I mean, a lot of people make money off of that. I mean, XSEED pretty much exists. Oh, yeah, they publish in-house for niche titles. And
Rising Star in the UK are the same.
Yeah. So, there you go. And you said this April Fool's bundle?
Yeah, it's like 4 games, and then you get some DLC for Defense Grid, and if you go over the average price, which is a little under $5 right now, you get a music pack or whatever. I haven't unzipped it and seen what's in it, but...
I will say those are always amazing, especially since they kind of give you that. It's kind of like chasing the carrot, because they give you that, like, you know what, you can pay whatever you want, but if you pay just this amount, we'll throw in something to sweeten the pot for you. And when people do that, it raises the maximum price just a little bit. And, yeah, I mean, it's a great value for its money. I've done it, I think, twice. I think I've done the winter one, and I did one of the first two that they had. And it's, you know, that's great. You can, indie games are sometimes a tough sell because a lot of people don't do digital downloads, or there's usually games that are bigger than the space itself. Like, for example, I know coming up we have like Sonic the Hedgehog 4. We have Fables the Journey. No, Fables Hero. And stuff like that, which are probably going to dominate the space as far as people talking about what's out there. for about a month or two.
Yeah, my problem with indie games, with the bundle specifically, is I'm actually more prone to buying indie games than I am actual retail releases at this point. So the bundles come out, and I own everything on them except one game. So I feel weird about double dipping, because usually the codes don't like split upable, so I could give some Steam codes to friends. Oh. But I often do it anyway.
Yeah, as I said, it kind of sucks. I know they like if somebody gifts you a game you already have, you're out to like either reject it or send it to somebody else, but kind of sucks that you can't do that for any individual game in a bundle.
It depends on the bundles. I think the Indie Royale bundle does, but the Indie Love bundles, the big ones, the ones that come out like once a year that Super Meat Boy was part of that one
Humble
time.
Indie bundle.
That's the one. Those ones I don't think split them up, or they didn't the first time.
Yeah, the way they split them up now is weird. Personally, I've just stopped buying indie bundles. It used to be, it's an indie bundle, I'll buy it regardless. But now I just think there's a bit of oversaturation, is that the word? It just seems like, I think, right, if I'm correct, now there's like four going on at one time. And now I'm just sort of looking at them and going, I don't really want any of the games in there, so...
Yeah, I really just like to curate and buy the individual games that appeal to me as I discover them.
Well, I was going to say, I guess the other benefit, though, is that I guess it's a bundle that has like six games in it. If you find three that you're interested in, you might find a surprise hit in there.
Yeah, I've had that. I mean, I never expected VVV to be as good as it was, so...
Yeah, and I've always thought that I think Nintendo tried something like this last generation, partially because they didn't have a proper demo distribution system. But I remember, I think it's Mario Kart Double Dash that came with a demo of Billy Hatcher and the Giant Egg, F-Zero, and like three or four of the games. And it's like, yeah, you use your bigger game to kind of market these smaller games that people may not have an interest in. But it's like, oh, you know what, it comes with the shoes game that people are going to pick up, so you probably get, even if it's a smaller percent, you might get more people who wouldn't have tried out the game to begin with. And I always thought that was a great strategy. We do have demos now, but one, not every game has a demo, and two, you still kind of get lost in the shuffle sometimes. What was the last demo you could think of on Xbox or PS3?
I don't play demos typically.
So. I do, because especially if it's a game I'm on the fence about, or a game I had no real idea about, which doesn't happen. The most recent example, I guess, for me was Kingdom of Amalia, which was a game I knew about and heard about, but the demo was, I tried it out because I wanted to. Because my problem with these huge open world games, and I usually mention it before, is like Skyrim and stuff like this, it's like they're vast and stuff, but the basic gameplay, the core combat, is never really that meaty.
Yeah.
And, for some people, I guess you can pay 100 hours and it's just about the exploration in the world. But if I have 100 hours for the game, say a system that I don't think really is that involved in, it's not something that's going to keep my interest for 100 hours.
Well, I can't really be interested in a game for 100 hours anyway, unless it's a multiplayer game. So.
Oh, I've mentioned that on the show before, too. If you see a game that says, oh, it's 100 hours long, to me that's like, okay, I'm going to skip this game.
Yeah.
If you tell me that you're like 30 hours long, you end up being like 50 hours when I do side quests and stuff. That's different. Even Xenoblade, as I mentioned when I finished it, it took me 5 months to beat that game because it was so long. What about you, Daniel? What have you been playing?
I have been playing... the Firefall beta, and it's if you don't know what Firefall is, it's this first-person MMO that's supposedly coming out this year. The NDA was lifted yesterday, so I can actually talk about it. At the moment, it's very basic. There's not a lot to it, and some people find what's there to be a bit grindy, mainly because there's not a lot there in the first place. But it looks to be really good. I hope the free-to-play model isn't bad. Because although I said to myself that I would never put money into a free-to-play game, and I've just spent $20 in Super Monday Night Combat, so much for that. But yeah, if it's good, and I agree with the way that the free-to-play model's done, I'll spend money in it, but not otherwise.
I'm kind of curious, though. What did you buy?
I bought a whole bunch of skins.
Like character skins?
Yeah.
It does not seem like something you would do.
Well, I kind of like the developer anyway. So, you know, I like what they do. And the fact that I've poured 160 hours into the game before putting a penny into it.
Sure
even
enough.
Though the game's still in beta, you know.
So, you're buying stuff in the beta?
Yes.
Okay, then. There you go. As for me, I recently, well, I guess yesterday, bested Kid Icarus Uprising, which turned out to be a fantastic game. I know the big problem everybody has is the controls, and it's odd to say, and I think we mentioned this when I talked about it when I got the game like 2 weeks ago, is that the controls aren't bad, they're not broken, they're functional, they work, they do the job of what they're supposed to do well. I think the big problem with the game is that there's really no comfortable way of holding your 3DS to play the game.
Well, that's what happens when you have something that's square, really, isn't it?
And well, it's not even that. It's because you have to, I mean, like, you know, like, it's you're holding the thing with one hand, which isn't so much of a problem, but then you're just kind of pushing down with the other hand.
Oh,
so it's
right,
kind of
yeah.
Like trying to balance it.
And then you've got to keep in the sweet spot if you've got the 3D on as well.
Yes, and that was another issue I had. And, I mean, this happens with 3DS games from time to time because, you know, like, it has a sweet spot and you can use it real fast. But because Kid Icarus is so fast and you're trying to steady your hand and move on with the stylus and all this other stuff, is that, like, I'll have it, like, for the on-rail section where, you know, like, you're basically just controlling pit and shooting. That's not so bad. It's only on the foot, and I can't leave it on for more than like a minute or two before it kind of makes me nauseous. So I end up turning it off. But the 3D when it's on is very impressive. It's just not something you can use often. And it's even the same thing with the stand, because the stand, while it, you know, it kind of helps with some of the problems where like the system becomes stationary. One is that I'm not always sitting around someplace to play my hand. Actually, I don't sit around and play my handheld most of the time. Usually it's when I'm doing something else or, you know, I have some time to kill.
Well, it's not really a portable system if you need to use a stand.
And that's the argument, which I agree with. On the same hand, you know, some people do, you know, the counter is like, oh, you know, people play their handhelds at home. And my thing is, yeah, that's true to a degree if I'm really into the game. But usually I play handheld games on the go. I mean, it's not the same for everybody. What were you going to say?
I absolutely play my handhelds at home. They're like a before-bed thing instead of reading, because reading doesn't really calm me down. I play video games like for a half hour before bed. I have a PSP that I've never taken out and dropped hundreds of hours in playing games on.
Well, that's what I was doing with Kid Icarus. I was playing, like, it would be like 1, I'm like, I'll play it up when I head to bed. But I haven't actually taken Kid Icarus out, but
that's the
Mario
sort of thing
Kart.
That you buy a PSP for anyway, because the PSP has got basically console games in your hand, and that's what they're designed for, playing at home.
Well, and I see that problem I always have with that, and I guess this has always been a problem with the PSP and PSP, is that I have consoles at home. So if I wanted console gaming on the go, I have consoles here. And, you know, this is I mentioned this when I reviewed Super Mario 3D Land, is that as a console game, it wouldn't have been that great. The levels are extremely short and bite-sized. But as a handheld title, if you want something that you can pick up and play for like 5 or 10 minutes on your commute to work, or if you have to run and do some errands, it's like the perfect companion. And I think Nintendo and Sony has done this. I don't have a Vita to kind of confirm as much, but I think with like the Street Pass and Nair features, they have given you reasons to take your handhelds with you besides playing this game. It's because it gives you bonus stuff on your system. With the 3DS, it gives you, you know, like you get street passes, which are Miis and items and games, special levels and weapons and stuff like that. Or you get play coins for like your find Mii and then puzzles and stuff like that. So there are reasons for you to keep taking your 3DS out, and it kind of motivates you to do that, which I think is a great system. And I think Nair works similarly, but I think Nair you can also kind of do most of the stuff from home because it gives people in that proximity. So yeah, there's that.
The thing for me with the PSP specifically is, I know there's a lot of, like, console games, God of War and Shooters Resistance, right, that are on the PSP, but for me it's always been about the RPGs, because RPGs, especially Japanese RPGs specifically, very grind heavy usually, and I really don't like almost any of the JRPGs that have come out on consoles this generation almost entirely. I like having a system where I can play for 15, 20 minutes, feel like I made like a level's worth of progress, and then shut it down and feel like I accomplished something. With a console game, I feel like when I boot it up, like if I'm not sitting there for an hour making progress, I didn't accomplish anything in my time.
That's actually usually my beef with RPGs, is that for a lot of it, it's sometimes you just kind of feel like you're spending 3 or 4 hours grinding so that you're up to the next boss.
Yeah, I feel like portable systems mitigate that a lot because it doesn't feel like you have to pour all that time into. The classic, like having the sleep features on both these handhelds is great. The game that broke me from console RPGs was Star Ocean 4 because every save point was an hour apart. Once you got going, you were committed to playing that game for at least an hour, and that just does not work for me anymore. That's not how I play games anymore.
Yeah, and I agree with you. And this is, like, for example, I picked up Tales of Symphonia Dawn of the New World at the start of this generation, and I played about 15 hours of it, and I felt like I hadn't gotten anywhere really in the game. My character's like level 20-something, but so much of it just was like, I'm staying in this one area to grind up so I can go through this dungeon where I'll get...
It reminds me of the time I was playing Final Fantasy XII, and there's a point in the game that's not too far in it, and the game just spawns infinite enemies at you, so I set up my gambits, and then put the controller down and came back 2 hours later and my characters were 10 levels higher.
Yeah, and I think this one of the classic examples or one of the things people always point to is like people are always like, why doesn't Nintendo do a Pokemon game on the consoles? And it's always been because Pokemon's kind of catered to that. You can pick up Pokemon and play for 5 minutes, just run around the grass, kill a random, catch a new Pokemon, save it, and you're good to go. I don't think people... I mean, you can kind of translate that to a console, but I don't think people want that type of bite-sized experience
Could you imagine, like, Final Fantasy XII, giant fields full of Pokemon that you're wandering around in tall grass for? It'd be the worst thing ever.
Yeah. And Glorious HD, while it would look nice, would be a pain in the ass for them to render, because I don't think anybody's going to want them to have like those 3D sprites they have on Pokemon Black and White. I'm not saying that, you know, you should accept Nintendo being hazy with not really changing Pokemon joke in 15 years, but I would imagine a Pokemon RPG would be expensive as hell to make. But yeah, back to Kid Icarus. Honestly, and if you follow me on Twitter, I apologize. I've been tweeting nonstop about this game for like 2 weeks. I just think it has a great sense of humor. I think a lot of games miss the boat on that. I mean, there are games that obviously have funny characters and funny moments. Uncharted comes to mind. I always think the Ratchet and Clank games have a decent sense of humor. But this game, you know, I guess it depends on who you are. I know I've seen some people who have issues with it because they don't like that style of humor. And, it's not for everybody. Not everybody's into that self-aware, cheesy, meta humor. But this game kind of has that, and it doesn't take itself seriously at all. At first, I compared it to a Saturday morning cartoon, but by the end, it's pretty much an anime. And I won't go into how exactly, because I don't want to ruin the twists and turns that take along this game. But it does have twists and turns, and it has a pretty morbid story, actually, when you get through it. But it's, you know, it never really dawns on you because the game's so lighthearted most of the time. If you can get past the initial learning curve with the controls and find any comfortable avenue to hold it, which I recommend if you do, it's probably the best to do it on a bed so that you can have your legs to support you, which is what I ended up doing after a while. It's totally worth it. I think it's one of the best 3DS games I've played so far. And honestly, I mean, it's jokingly, but it is my game of the year so far. It also helps us see when I've played this year. So it's heavy competition. So yes, that should do it for what we've been saying. And now we have news, and I mean, it's been a really, I don't want to say it's been a quiet week, it's actually been a really loud week, but most of the noise from this week came from console rumors for the Wii U, the PS4, and the
Xbox. Getting tired of this, like, honestly, if you're not going to show us anything concrete, don't even bother anymore, because...
Well, I mean, it's not like it's Microsoft, Nintendo, and Sony doing this. It's just like, I understand why. I assume console rumors get huge hits from websites.
They must do.
That's what everybody's excited for. Yeah, so we're not going to do that. I don't do rumors because they change. We've had 50 rumors this week about, like everything. Like, as far as I know, the Wii U is weaker than the 360 PS3, is on par with the PS3 360.
It's stronger than the PS3 and 360. And the PS4 has a Blu-ray drive, the 360. The new Xbox has a Blu-ray drive. The new Xbox doesn't have a Blu-ray drive. They can support used games. They can't support used games.
The Xbox 3, the next Xbox has 16 cores now, up from 4 on Monday. The PS4 has, I think it has 2 processors now. And so, yeah, if you want, they're out there. It's not hard to miss. I'm almost certain every website's commenting on them at this point. I also don't really care for the Power game. At the end of the day, I don't play Power. I play video games. So, if anything, I'm more interested in the rumors.
Well, Xenoblade proves that. Because if you played Power, then you wouldn't have touched Xenoblade with a, with a tablet.
I wouldn't have touched it out of Wii games.
Well, there you go.
It happens. You can play whatever. So, yeah, that's out there. But we do have concrete news. And, I mean, this has been the story of the month. If we had a story of the month for each. But March was dominated by EA, BioWare, and Mass Effect 3. And that's finally come to a head, somewhat. As BioWare announced this week that they're going to do an extended DLC to expand on the ending for Mass Effect 3. Thoughts on that?
I think that's they're just doing it the best way they could have done, because if they'd ignored it, then people would have just got louder and louder and louder. And had they just changed the ending that already exists, people would be questioning BioWare's artistic integrity. So I think if they are doing what they say they're doing, which is adding more context to the current ending, then, that's fine. And, there are people that are going to be happy with it. There are people that are not going to be happy with it. You can't ever please everyone. So I think BioWare and EA took the right sort of step with it, and they couldn't really have done anything else, to be honest.
I was going to say, I guess the best part is they're offering it for free. And as far as I know, it's DLC. It's not a patch.
Well,
so if you're content...
Patch, really.
Huh?
Well, the way the current consoles work, they can't really be a patch.
Well, I was going to say, but yeah, that's what I was going to say. If you're content with how Mass Effect 3 ended...
Well, yeah, you don't have to download the extra stuff, do you?
Yeah. That's, and if you have an issue with it, and you didn't, you can download this. If it still doesn't appease you, honestly, at this point, I don't know what else you would want from them to do. I mean, granted, yes, it depends on what the actual extension is when it comes out. But, I think they've done it. They've made the best of a crappy situation. And personally speaking, I don't believe this is going to lead to the downfall of everybody complaining about every ending in every video game they don't like.
Of course not. They already do that, though.
Well, I was going to say that any fandom, video games, movies, comics, movies, TV shows, sports, anything, you're going to hear people who complain. I'm sure, you have sports people who say the officiating was terrible. You have moviegoers who say the ending ruined, the ending wasn't that great. You have TV shows. I'm sure people still talk about the Austin, the Sopranos thing, stuff like that. So it happens. People complain. People are upset about stuff. People move on with their lives. That won't change, but I don't think you're going to see in mass where people are just like signing petitions for every game. They don't like, and even if you do, I think it just goes to the strength of Mass Effect and BioWare that people are so passionate about this franchise that they went this far. And because I've seen a lot of people who are like, nobody started a petition for Rages and stuff like that, and I'm just thinking that just shows that not a lot of people were invested in Rage or cared enough to really contain a petition.
Well, Benji Kachera of Ars Technica even went so far as to say that Rage was creatively bankrupt, so
Yeah, so, and I've always said, I always said that was, that was the great thing for BioWare, that if people are this engrossed in your universe, it means you created something special.
Yeah, you create something meaningful, and, as soon, when something like that becomes meaningful, that's when it becomes art.
Yeah, So we shall see. Anything to add, Matthew?
I tend to be on the side that thinks that this is giving the keys to the gamers and letting them dictate policy on artistic storytelling in games. Maybe it'll all be fine. I don't know.
But I've got a question for you. Uh-huh? Have you finished Mass Effect 3? Or
seen the ending? Not. I haven't even bought it. Well, I have very little intention to.
I've seen a lot of people that have said that, and then they've gone and seen the ending and gone, okay, I can understand where they're coming from.
I know what the ending is, because I watched my brother play through most of the game. But I bought Mass Effect 1 and 2 on Steam, and when they went to Origin only, I decided that I was going to actually stick to my guns. Also, I don't have $60 to spend, so it's a moot point anyway. But I think that it would be okay if people were dissatisfied with the ending and wanted to express that. That's perfectly fine. But the vitriol and the way that people have gone about it is the most irresponsible thing I have seen on the internet in a while. At least 3 or 4 weeks.
I don't think so. I mean, okay, I assume you're talking about stuff like the FTC complaining to the Better Bureau stuff.
Yes.
Okay, that stuff, the FTC's, I think, was one person. It wasn't like a whole mass movement. And I don't really know the story with the Better Bureau. But, you spoke to 2 points, and I think one, I tend to be on the opposite side with a lot of people on this one, is that I'm happy that it's given power back to the players, because I think gamers have given up a lot of power this generation because they want to support this industry, because they want to support games.
I think there's a fine line between consumer protection and allowing artistic people to create the stories they want to tell. I think you have to separate the business from the creative side of that.
And I can kind of see that. I disagree, though, because, I mean, as much as you want to say that, you are kind of creating an art for an entertainment purpose, and that comes with an inherent bias with the consumers. You know, like if Mass Effect 1 had a terrible ending, no matter how creatively or artistic it was, and people complained about that, they would have changed it for Mass Effect 2 to make it more commercially viable, which they did.
They did.
Make a Mass Effect 2 more of an action game than an RPG than Mass Effect 1. And I think that's the nature of the industry. And I think it's always going to be hard. And this is why, personally speaking, I've never really cared about this games as art or, you know, artistic values of video games, because the nature of the interaction isn't just between the player and the game, but now it's between the players and the business side, because they're helping form these products. They're helping evolve them and change them in ways that sometimes the creators never thought of. And the example I gave this week is the way that the Bungie and the Halo community has evolved the games over the past decade, where a lot of the multiplayer modes that we have now are user-created stuff that was introduced in Halo 2 and 3 by just messing around with the settings that Bungie thought was, you know, viable, and they've included it officially in the game shader or even stages that are user-created that they incorporate into their entire package. And I think, this is a hard argument to make, because I still don't know why gameplay isn't protected under people's artistic visions when it comes to that, but I do see, if there's a good back and forth between the consumer and the publisher and the developers, where it helps to make a better product, I have no issues with that. And BioWare seems to agree. If they're going to, they're not changing it, they're evolving it, they're expanding on it.
I think it's arguable whether or not this results in a better product. I think Mass Effect 1 was a better game than Mass Effect 2, which is probably a better game than Mass Effect 3.
And that's always going to be an issue with anything. It's the subjective natures of opinions. I think there are people who would prefer Mass Effect to be more of an RPG than an action game. But it's also that theory of the squeaky wheel gets the grease. The people who complained about the RPG elements won out, and then the people who had an issue with it becoming an action game complained, and then Mass Effect 3 tries to appease both camps.
And at least in this instance, you can just ignore it if you can just not download the DLC if you don't want to see it. Whereas, obviously, in Mass Effect 2, you know, if you bought the game, assuming it was going to be like play more like Mass Effect 1, and you find out that all of a sudden I've gotten Gears of War, then that's a bit different. So.
Yeah. I don't want to say that Mass Effect 2 is a bad game, because I enjoyed it a lot.
Oh, no.
I think there's a big problem with gamer culture that everything is either perfect or the worst thing in the world. It doesn't have to be those extremes. I think there are problems. Yes, I agree this is probably the best way EA could have handled it, but I don't know. Like, it's the culture that bothers me.
And I think that goes into something else. I think, and this is something I've always tried to, you know, especially when discussing certain things, is that I think you also have to take away that there's the gamers culture and then there's the internet culture. And I think because gaming has grown up with the internet so much, that a lot of times what we see on the internet sometimes becomes what everybody sees and believes. And I think it's one of those things where, like, I don't want to say it's necessarily a vocal minority, but the people who are usually the most outspoken and the loudest are usually the people who don't represent a majority of the people in this game. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of people who played Mass Effect 3 and probably had problems at the ending. They just didn't care to, you know, I finished the game, I'm moving on with my life. And it's just like the people who really had an issue with it went all out. Because even still, I think there's probably like 100,000 people who complained about this thing in total. And I mean, I got into that. I guess that also goes to the EA winning the worst consumer company for the year. Where, you know, like everybody's going to say, and I agree, and this is what I say, is that I think Bank of America is a much worse company.
Well, even like me, the biggest EA hater on the planet, you know, I can recognize that, you know, contributing somewhat to the downfall of the economy is kind of worse than trying to charge people for things in a video game you already bought. Well, I say kind of with a little bit.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, and that's the thing. It's like Bank of America has really affected a lot of more people. But I assume that the people who were voting on this probably, the people who were screwed over by Bank of America, who had issues with Bank of America, probably had better things to do with their day than vote on a consumer poll for EA. And that goes for any other company that was on this, just really. And I think people, again, I think it's just gamers trying to get their voices out there as much as possible.
But that doesn't reflect very well on gamers as a whole. Like, those people become the representative voice of all of us, even if we don't agree with them.
The problem is we've seen in the past that even with the Mass Effect franchise, that just the voice of reason is not always the voice that's listened to. Because do you remember Jeff Keighley on Fox News when everything blew up about the Liara lesbian scene in Mass Effect 1? You know, Keighley kept his cool, he spoke with reason, and nobody listened to him. All they listened to was the person who could shout the loudest.
Yeah, and I think that happens with anything, because there's always the extremist views. I was going to say, and I think the other thing with this, and this is just me speaking personally, but from what I've seen over this past month with this whole Mass Effect 3 thing, is that consumers don't have a voice in this industry at this moment, because the journalists, the press, the media aren't the ones speaking up for gamers. They're the ones talking bad about gamers, calling them entitled and whiny, and, you know, like, there was one guy who's like, talking about a game was driven in his mother's basements and stuff like that. That's not helping them. So it's like, in a lot of industries, the press, the media are the ones who kind of call out these companies on this stuff. And we have a situation where the gaming press is so dependent on publishers and developers to kind of keep, you know, information coming, that they take their sides and they kind of stick up for them. So gamers find ways to voice their opinions. It may not be the best way, but it's getting out there. It's making
them. If people hear it, then good.
If my job was listening to the people who commented on video game articles all day, I would hate gamers too, more than I already do. Like, that's the worst. It's the worst part of the internet. Like, of course they're going to think they're entitled, because the people who comment on those articles are entitled. They are awful people, a lot of them.
I was going to say that goes for every industry. I mean, as a avid, like I said, as an avid comic and movie and video game watcher, player, reader, whatever.
Absolutely.
It's across the board. It's not just a game with already special whiny code. It's like the internet gives people that voice, because people can hide behind the fact that they don't have to back up their words. They can be tough guys. They can be macho men or whatever they want, because they don't, you know, nobody's out there to call them, because they have that anonymity to them.
But I don't think giving them a pass for acting that way is going to help anyone.
I'm not saying give them a pass. I'm just saying, like, for example, Daniel is an avid EA disliker.
Yeah.
And he meant it. He talks about it all the time, and he usually gives his reasons. But that doesn't mean EA's hearing him. That doesn't mean the journalists are hearing him as a whole. This sends a mass message that we're not really keen on what you've been doing with us this generation. Granted, it's not going to change anything because these same people are going to continue buying EA games.
Yeah, that's the thing. These people complain, still buy the games. Like, you eventually have to stick to your guns and not purchase this stuff.
Well, yeah, I will say that I have not bought an EA game in at least 12 months. So, you know, I saw that there was a problem with EA, and I was like, you know what, I'm not going to do it anymore. You know, you're not going to have my money.
I am a lot more general. I'm a lot more personalized than that. I don't have a problem with any company. I do think some of the business tactics EA have are shady, but I don't support the games that support those tactics. Not every one of their games do. And it's a case-by-case basis. I don't want to eliminate any part of the industry for myself because of whatever this overall company may do, but it's the same reason I don't own Mass Effect 3. It's because, you know, even though we've had this whole DLC, this ending business for the last month, my beef with the game is still the From Ashes stuff and the online pass that they had before the game came out. And I think that story kind of got swept under the rug over this past month for good reason. But I would mention that the EA winning the poll thing was stupid, but the reactions on both sides of the aisle...
I think the EA winning the poll was stupid, but the people actually taking the internet poll seriously as well are stupid, you know?
Yeah. And it's not even like them taking it seriously, it's like them spewing so much venom about it. Like people don't know, like, Bank of America, you have to know that Bank of America is this really evil company. Like, I'm sure most people who follow anything over the past 4 years know that Bank of America isn't a great company, but there was a reason EA won, and it also speaks to the strength of, I think, like I said, gamers and the internet are kind of hand-in-hand, especially this generation, and I think it just shows that they can rally together when needed. Now, if they do it for a good cause, you know, we shall see. I guess while sticking with negative news, because why not, Sony closed down Zipper this week. Is it Zipper Entertainment?
Yeah, it's Zipper Interactive.
Okay. Who were the makers of the SOCOM games, and I think MAG on the PS3. I just assume Sony, you know, they never really found a footing this generation with Sony. MAG wasn't that huge of a hit, and I don't even know if they did the SOCOM games this generation.
They did SOCOM 4, because they were pushing Move.
Okay.
I forgot that came out.
Well, there you go. It says it all, really, doesn't it?
I mean, it's always terrible when that happens, but... Well, actually, I guess a lot of things happen. I think, well, we weren't around for that week. Last week was just a bloodbath. Sega, THQ, who else closed down? There was studios chosen, branches being shut down completely, rearranged, and I just assumed it was the financial quarter... financial year ending, cleaning up, or whatever. So there's that. It was not a good 2 weeks for the industry. So I hope they end on their feet and find something. At the end of the day, I think we're up to like 106 companies that have been closed down this generation.
Ouch.
So, I mean, yeah. Granted, some of them have found work and some of them have opened up other studios. But what happens with a lot of them?
It doesn't bring Time Splitters back, does it?
But that studio is still in business, so. That's not an issue with closing down.
We would have a Transformers game if Crytek hadn't bought them. Guarantee
maybe.
It.
Let's wait till E3. Yes, there we go.
You really think they're going to announce a Time Slayers game?
No, I don't.
E3?
But I'm saying...
I don't. I just like to give him false hope because we went through this last year.
We've been through this. I've been through this every year since Time Splitters Future Perfect came out, okay?
Wait for the next console generation.
That's right.
It would be the logical time to launch a rebranding of that IP.
Yeah, and I think that was their initial rumor last year was that it might be a Nintendo Wii U launch title.
I'll buy a Wii U in a heartbeat, even if I buy no other game.
Because, yeah, one is that the company obviously has Nintendo roots with they were the people behind GoldenEye and Perfect Dark and the Nintendo 64. And yeah, Nintendo needs a shooter. As much as I don't want to see another shooter on the market, they kind of need a shooter to be competitive in that.
Well, if you're going to make a shooter, why not make one that people have been asking for and one that's going to be unique at the same time?
And I think it also fits into their image because Time Spin isn't an overly violent game. I don't even know if it has blood in it. It's been a while.
I don't know, actually.
I don't think it does, because you fight like mutants or aliens or something like that.
Wait. Are you saying Conduit is not Nintendo's premier shooter?
Well, I can tell you Nintendo.
yeah, but we're talking about shooters that are going to be good.
Well, there you go.
That doesn't necessarily have to be true, because they didn't make Geist. So, yeah, there's that. I mean, the other rumor is that Retro's working on a shooter or something for the Western audience. Again, we'll see at E3. We have 2 months to go, which means we're going to be driven crazy with rumors over the next 2 months. Well, actually, I guess rumors and Sony leaks, because Sony can't keep anything a secret. So, we had a announcement of a new Double Dragon game, Double Dragon Neon, this week. Which I read Double Dragon. I'm a huge fan of beat 'em ups. I read Way Forward. I'm like, yes, because they make really awesome looking games.
It's 3D though, right?
I saw this game. I have no idea what happened. It's 3D. The art style looks really generic and bland right now.
Why would you make Way Forward make a 3D game? Like, every game they make is beautiful and 2D and almost perfect.
I think it's kind of that mentality, and it happens, and it's one of the mentalities I don't like, is that a lot of people don't like 2D hand-drawn sprites because it makes it too cartoony or kiddie. It's true. You have that attitude. You even have that attitude where people believe that no 2D game should ever be a retail product anymore because there's no value in them. But it's a really bland art style, and sometimes a game can look really bleh in screenshots, and you get a video, and it's even worse. It moves so, and it looks just like tedious and not fun. It looks like Turtles in Time's reshelled.
What beat 'em ups have you liked this generation? Just curious.
Honestly, there hasn't been much. Castle Crashers come to mind.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that's more of a dungeon.
Streets of Rage 2, that came out this generation, right? Because it comes out every generation.
It comes out every... I don't think Rage counts. What other beat-em-ups have there been?
There was Turtles in Time Reshelled, of course. if you want to count that, there's the Scott Pilgrim game, which was probably the one I liked the most.
The Scott Pilgrim game I would have played more if it had online co-op.
That's fair. There's been a bunch of them. You just look at Xbox Live Arcade, and it's littered with a bunch of terrible games no one wants to play.
Yeah, I think the problem with making beat-em-ups is that they're really simple games, but you have to find the perfect avenue to make them fun and not tedious and repetitious, because they are really simple. For the most part, you have a attack button, a jump button, a special attack button, and that's it. And with Castle Crashers, the reason that works is because you had the weapon system. So that always gave, and it was co-op, so that always worked. Turtles in Time completely missed the boat. It took everything that made that game fun, music, art style, and stuff, and levels, and it just made a mess of it. I've enjoyed a lot of the old ones, but even those have had their inherent problems. Like X-Men, the arcade game, I think is completely kind of butchered on Xbox Live Arcade. And I assume you can do it the normal way, but the fact that a lot of these games were made for coin-op, so that you would die and you put in more quarters so you can beat the game, but when you get unlimited continues, it kind of defeats the purpose, because what happens is you just get people spamming special attacks, dying, and then respawning. So there's no real challenge there anymore. So yes, hopefully... Oh, and there was also that god-awful one on Wii, Soul Calibur Legends. Somebody thought the Soul Calibur game would make a great beat-em-up. There we go. Rock Band Blitz was announced this week, which is an Xbox Live PSN title, and what do you think it is?
A music game?
A rhythm game, I guess, would be, because it doesn't use the instruments.
Wait, what? This is my most anticipated game of the year immediately, the moment it was announced.
Yeah, I believe it doesn't use the instruments. It uses They use control, yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot like frequency or amplitude, where you have it's all controller based. There's the pass of the songs, like you have in Rock Band, but they're all lined up together, and you can hop from each one to the other one, and you use buttons to hit the inputs and get power ups and whatnot. The big hook here is all of the DLC for Rock Band and Rock Band 2 and Rock Band 3 works in it automatically.
I was going to ask, because then it would be pretty pointless if it wasn't, but the fact that it is really good, actually.
I was going to say, it's a tremendous thing. It's it's like them keeping the brand alive without having to reinvest into this huge, because the music instrument genre was kind of a sinking ship this generation. So it helps them keep the brand alive. It helps them, they reward the valued consumers, because they kind of, it's like, you've been supporting us. You get to keep all your songs and try them out in a new fashion.
They're still putting out great songs all the time, so.
So, yeah, I mean, I think that was the issue, though, is that I think Rock Band and Guitar Hero were self-contained platforms that they just kept on trying to... It's like if Nintendo, Microsoft, and Sony kept on releasing a new console every year, saying, like, it's the same thing, but we want you to rebuy it this year.
I have three DSs that argues that that's what Nintendo did.
To be fair,
he's talking about
all
the time.
I mean, I think the only ones you really had to upgrade were the DS Fat and DSi. Other than that, I guess you were really just prefer the form of the DS, right? You didn't have to.
Oh no, I'm being mostly sarcastic. I didn't even get an I.
I know what you mean, but I mean like with Rock Band and Guitar Hero, it's basically like buy our $150 music instruments again. Even though the ones you had, Jash, you were perfectly fine with the game.
Just they've got a new gimmick this time around that we're not going to use very well, that's all.
Yeah, and so, this way you keep the fan base alive, and hopefully at the start of the next generation you come back bigger and stronger and hope for the best. Especially being that if the devices aren't backwards compatible, you can have a reason to sell people new instruments.
If DLC is backwards compatible in the next generation.
Yeah, that would be a huge crapshoot if it isn't. I can imagine a lot of... Well, you know what? I would say I can imagine a lot of people being upset, but I assume people are going to be upset and just kind of carry on with their lives.
Yeah, I will be upset, and then when a good game comes out, buy a console.
What you should do is you should buy Harmonix 400 cupcakes.
Four different colors, right?
But I could buy myself 400 cupcakes and not feel bad anymore and still make the same amount of change in the world.
Yeah. And I guess I have Pokemon Conquest announced, but actually it was a lot of announcements about the 3DS's release dates this week. I think Pokemon Conquest comes out in June, and this is the Pokemon... X Nobunaga Ambition.
Nobunaga's Ambition.
Nobunaga, whatever, Ambitions crossover, which is a Pokemon historical tactical RPG or something like that. If any of those works makes no sense in the context of Pokemon, I'm right there with you. There's no evidence that Pokemon didn't exist in Wars, but I've never thought about it that way. We also had Mario Tennis Open, which comes out in May, and that has no RPG mode, which a lot of people are upset about, and it has a really odd Super Mario Tennis Training mode, which is basically Mario hitting balls on old Mario stages, it sounded cooler in my head than it looks in the video.
like, does he, like, break blocks using the ball?
Yeah.
That sounds like it could be neat.
Yeah, it sounded like I thought it was like a platform with tennis elements that you're running and just trying to hit. But it's kind of like, if you ever play the Mario Tennis game, they usually have like that, I can think Mario Tennis on the GameCube had a mode where you had to hit certain spots of the wall and they would color it.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like that, where you basically, it's like a backdrop, and like it's basically like if you're Mario going through the stage and you hit enemies and you hit blocks and stuff with the ball to get power-ups and stuff like that.
You know what this sounds like? This sounds like a WarioWare minigame.
Yeah, it sounds like a minigame. I was expecting like a huge, because it's kind of odd, and it was something that came into my head when I was looking at this. Like, as much Mario's been around for 26 years now, or 27 years now, I guess. you know, dozens of video games and stuff like that. But for whatever reason, whenever Nintendo goes back, it's always back to Mario 1. They never really expand beyond this.
Why not 3? Or Worlds?
Oh, but yeah, that's, I mean, I guess 3 had it with Super Mario 3D N, which is kind of like a throwback to that game. But a lot of times, it's just like, oh, you get to play 1-1 again, and here's 1-2, and yeah. I'm sure you remember 1-3. I'm like, those are cool. They're iconic levels, of course, but it's like, there's so many other...
Where are the rabbit ears? That's what I'm asking.
Yeah. Where's the throwback to Giant World from Super Mario Brothers 3, or, you know, like, on any of the places in Super Mario's world, or, like, Bomb Battlefield and Super Mario 64 and stuff like that. I think, you know, like, going back to those stages and these environments would help, too, because there's a lot of history there that they don't always explore. I mean, it would be hard, and Mario doesn't need as much as Sonic, but I'd love to see a Super Mario Generations-type game. Just going through that. But that is neither here nor there. There was an announcement that the Rhythm Final Fantasy is coming out July 3rd, and then Kingdom Hearts 3D is coming out July 31st, so that's the summer square.
That's not Kingdom Hearts 3D,
no.
Is it? Okay.
It's Duodecum. No, I'm thinking of the wrong game.
It's Dream Drop Distance.
Yeah, that's it.
Oh, okay. I gave up on Kingdom Hearts a while back, so I'm not up on that.
Yeah, it's and the name.
Well, it's one of those spin-off games that you don't want. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, I was gonna say the name's clever because it makes you think like it's Kingdom Hearts 3D, like Kingdom Hearts 3 in 3D, but no, it's 3D's as in Dream Drop Distance because. Get it?
Yeah. It's on the 3DS, guys. We need to put 3D in the title.
The worst part is that is by far the best spin-off title Kingdom Hearts has had yet.
Yeah, but that's a 385
over 2 days. And
What is it, Birth by Sleep?
Yep.
Yeah, it's...
Birth by Sleep kind of sounds like some emo punk band.
No, I kind of just imagine like Squall and Cloud on an emo punk band album cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and that's about it this week. I don't know if there's anything else you folks wanted to add or mention that I might have missed. Okay. So that gives us just enough time for our question of the week, which is kind of sad because most of us aren't here this week. But I asked this on Twitter as well. How do you organize your game collection?
Ooh. So I have my game collection organized by installed when you're talking about Steam, and my console games are in alphabetical sequel order. So it'd be A to Z, obviously, and then if say we've got Call of Duty 4, and then after that will be Modern Warfare 2. And after that would be Modern Warfare 3, not my own Modern Warfare 3. And then World at War, and then Black Ops, because I count World at War, Black Ops as a sequel to World at War.
Okay.
And Halo is a special, because Halo Wars is in chronological order. Halo is in chronological order. So it goes Wars, Anniversary, ODST, 3, Reach. Reach is before...
1, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay,
so Wars, Wars, Reach, Anniversary... ODST 3.
Yeah, I was going to say, technically ODST should be on top of 3, or just like right next to it, really, really.
Well, it happens during the events of Halo 2, so it happens at the same time as Halo 2, so it goes before.
Oh, I thought it happened at the same time as Halo 3.
No, it's Halo 2.
Okay. Okay, what about, and I guess it's not as difficult, what about games that don't have the same naming convention? There aren't many franchises that do, but do you have any?
Give me an example game.
I mean, just the Mario franchise, because like you have Super Mario Brothers, of course.
In that case, I would probably order them by the date they were released.
Okay, because I was gonna say, because then you have stuff like New Super Mario Brothers, which would technically throw it off because SNES.
Yeah. I would put them in date by release under Mario, so M.
Okay,
it's a very complex system, but it makes sense in my head.
Oh, that. That's you. I mean, it's really how you go. You one you have to have it make sense too. What about you?
I have a cardboard box in my closet that has all the portable games chucked into it, and I have another cardboard box in my closet that has all the console games chucked into it. And that's about it.
Okay. I think I've mentioned this on the show. I don't organize my video games, really. Part of it is because just the nature of video games is that I'm taking them in and out all the time, and I just think it's too much of a headache to kind of reorganize them every so often. Like my movies I do because you only watch like one movie at a time, and you could put it right back. With video games, I've mentioned this before, like right now I tend to have about a dozen video games sitting in front of my TV, which I'm currently rotating through. And then I have a backup pile, which is my backlog of games I want to play, and that changes every so often, not necessarily because I played the game, but because something else came in, and something else just kind of goes way to the back of the line. For example, Silent Hill Shattered Memories was a game I wanted to play, but it's just kind of like, I just get so many games that it's really just kind of way back there on the list now. For the most part, it is organized by console, though. So all my Wii games are together, all my 360 games are together, all my PS3 games are together. DS and 3DS games kind of stick together just because, for the most part, with my handheld games, I usually find like a case and just dump them all in there so that
you need that to take them with you. So
yeah, which is the point, because I don't like handheld cases. just because they just clutter up space, because for the most part you want handheld games to be accessible. So I don't need 50 cases of these titles, and you know, talking about that, I should probably get rid of these. Because I do find like a case and just kind of dump them all in there. They're not organized in any fashion. I mean, I keep the Pokemon games together. Right. Also, probably because I want to beat one of them one of these days.
Hopefully before Black and White 2 come out.
I bested Red and Blue, but this was back in my youth when I was young.
Well, this was 16 years ago, so...
Yes, like I said, I was young. And I think I beat the first half of the second... What is it? Gold and Silver?
There's no beating the first half. It's either you beat the game or you don't.
Well, you beat the half, and then the old region opens up.
Yeah, I would count that. That one only you get a pass on.
Yeah. And then everything else is usually... And it's the same pattern with all the Pokemon games. It's like, I get up to the 5th and 6th dungeon, and then I just stop. No reason whatsoever. I just kind of stop there. And it's happened with Platinum, Pearl, Black, White, item. It's just kind of like... And I get there, and it's like... And then I pick it up again. I'm like, okay, I'm going to beat it this time. I play it for like 2 hours. I'm like, you know what? I'll put it down. And it's not that I don't find them fun. They're enjoyable games. I get a team I enjoy. I raise them. I teach them moves and stuff like that. And then it's just like, I'll wait until the next game comes out and I'll beat that one, I promise.
Well, now you can't do that because it's a sequel for the first time ever. So
we shall see. A trailer comes out today.
Does it?
I think it's airing on the Pokemon show in like an hour or two.
God damn it. I didn't know about this.
I just read about it. Somebody mentioned it on Twitter, and it seems to be official.
I get told these things.
Smash TV, or whatever it's called in Japan.
Oh, I don't know.
Pokemon Smash, something like that.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. My collection is really just misorganized. I mean, as long as I can find the games I'm currently playing, what really becomes an issue is when I'm trying to find a specific multiplayer game to play, because that tends to go missing. And one thing that does drive me crazy is I have a ton of siblings. So growing up, like, they would play games and they just put them in any case. It's like, I hate that. That's one of my biggest pet peeves, is that if you take something out, put it in its proper case, because I don't want to have to, like, I've done it before. I found Uncharted 2 in, like, my Die Hard Blu-ray collection.
My friend does that. He's got, like, the biggest collection of 360 games you could ever hope to see in your life. And it's like, oh, Craig, can I borrow this game? And he goes, yeah, sure. So I go into his room, take the case out, and say it's, like, Halo 3, and it's got the Bioshock disc in it. So then I've got to go to the Bioshock case, and it's got the Mass Effect 2 disc in it. So I go to the Mass Effect 2 case, and it's got, I don't know, Medal of Honor in there. And it's like, for God's sake, I just want to borrow a game.
Yeah, and it's just, like, this huge puzzle, like, you're unwrapping this game in history. And, yeah, it drives me nuts. And, you know, it's not that hard, for the most part, to find one case. Because, especially with me, they're usually always out in front if I'm actually using them. But yeah, I hate having, because I've gotten games. I think I don't even know where my Gears of War 1 is. I have the case for it. I have no idea where the case is.
I mean, the worst, if you're going to do that, you buy a massive binder, you put all your discs in, and then it doesn't matter what you take out and put where, because, you know, all of your games are in one place.
Yeah.
Oh, people, man.
But that's, somebody mentioned that this weekend, I might do that with my movies, but I do miss the pretty box art. So, yeah. Anyhow, that is it for Dual Wielding Episode 64. I want to thank Matthew for joining us, and Daniel for being here this week. Hopefully, the crew's back next week, or we'll find somebody else to fill in. Till next time. Later.